On Monday, police arrested an Egyptian executive on charges that he locked a housekeeper in his room at the Pierre Hotel in New York and groped her. That, of course, follows the allegation that the French leader of the IMF, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, assaulted a hotel maid in another hotel in New York. Now, both of those hotels plan to arm workers with panic buttons that will alert a security office when there's a problem. And a hotel workers' union is working on legislation to mandate the panic buttons in New York hotels. But what about domestic workers who work in private homes, don't have a union? Of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger's story involved a domestic worker, an affair that was said to be consensual, but we know workers can easily be pressured into relationships with a powerful boss who might threaten to fire them. And domestic workers are harder to organize. They're invisible. Enter Ai-Jen Poo. Journalist Barbara Ehrenreich calls her the nanny's Norma Rae. She's co-creator and director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, a collection of dozens of domestic workers groups across the country. She also helped create and pass a domestic workers' bill of rights in New York and joins us from there for a look at unionizing domestic workers. And Ai-Jen Poo, we do not know what happened in the Schwarzenegger case. As we said, it sounds consensual, but that's the point about domestic workers, isn't it? We just don't know what's going on.
Domestic workers work in isolated conditions in their employers' homes around the country, and so they're really vulnerable. Essentially, workers are at the whim of their employers. We often call the domestic work industry the Wild West because it's as if anything goes, and there's really very little protection under the law. Actually, domestic workers are excluded from almost every major labor law. So when you think about workers being isolated in unmarked homes around the country without labor protections or recourse, there is a very heightened vulnerability there.
We'll explain that because, as we said, you've helped form unions, but it's not unions in the sense that we think of. Domestic workers still don't have, for instance, collective bargaining rights. So what does this mean that you've created these unions for them?
Domestic workers are technically excluded from the right to collectively bargain and form a union that many U.S. workers have under the National Labor Relations Act. But what has happened is that where there's abuse and exploitation, workers will come together and organize. And that's what's happened over the course of the last 15 years in cities around the country. Domestic workers come together in church basements, in each other's living rooms, in immigrant community organizations to support each other, and over time really building a strong voice for domestic workers. Now we have those organizations in 17 cities around the country. And in places like New York, for example, a group like Domestic Workers United has 4,000 members.
And you've told us they pay a $5 monthly fee to join, but what do they get? It's nice that they have other people to talk to. I mean, that's a huge step. As you said, many domestic workers are just so isolated. But what else does this organization give them?
Everything from training and job skills. So there's a nanny training program where nannies can get infant child CPR certification, all kinds of job skills, to free legal services. Over the years, we've helped domestic workers who were underpaid by their employers win over $500,000 in unpaid wages. Mm-hmm. And then when the Domestic Worker Bill of Rights passed in New York last year, hundreds upon hundreds of domestic workers were part of that process to pass that legislation.
And what does that legislation call for?
It calls for protection from discrimination and harassment, overtime pay, a minimum of one day of rest per week, and a minimum of 3 days paid leave per year. And it's really a minimum standard that now provides a basic safety net for workers to then negotiate from.
So what happens if a domestic worker realizes, because she's maybe joined one of these organizations and now she's informed that she deserves three paid days off a year or overtime pay, who does she go to? And if she does go to someone to report this, doesn't that make for a very tough situation in the home with the person she works for if she turns them in?
The workers usually go to one of the organizations. So there's six domestic worker groups in different communities in the city, and they can tell their story. Many of them have legal clinics where they can speak to a lawyer and talk through what her different options are. Many workers decide to leave the job that they're in before they make a complaint because of how difficult it is. But there's a lot of coaching and support that organizers and members, other members of these organizations can provide.
So it's kind of a soft approach. It's not as if they can go to a shop, a union shop rep, and then their employer gets fined. It doesn't work that way. It's more of a soft negotiation of these issues.
Initially, but then if the worker wants to continue to pursue and there's a roadblock with the employer, then we do file lawsuits against employers or file complaints at the Department of Labor. That is, of course, an option for workers.
And just so people really understand why you felt this was needed, you were coming across cases of domestic workers who were in literal enslavement.
We've had cases where workers literally raised three children for a family and did all of the cooking, cleaning, living in their employer's homes for up to 15 years and actually not being paid for that entire time. We've seen cases, a case that I often talk about involves a woman named Maria who's came to this country originally because she couldn't afford the insulin that her own child needed in her home country. And so she came to be able to earn a living. She ended up working 18 hours a day, 6 days a week, living in, caring for a child with a disability, but doing all of the housework for a family of six for under $3 an hour. And she was sleeping in the basement where there was an overflowing sewage system every night. So her sleeping quarters were absolutely horrendous.
Well, and to people who are saying, how can this be? In many of these stories, these people came to the U.S. with promises of, glorious jobs, and those promises weren't fulfilled, and they had nowhere else to go, no money. They don't know anyone. They often don't speak the language, and so there's no way out for them. But now you have passed in at least New York State this Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. How do you make sure that it gets enforced?
It's a lot of education, a lot of outreach. The Department of Labor is working with us to reach out to communities across the city to let both workers and employers know that there's new protections and new standards and new guidelines. And we've actually found that employers really, there's a lot of good employers out there who want to do the right thing and who don't know what that means. There's no guidelines, so even if you're trying to do the right thing by your domestic employee, before the passage of this bill, there was nowhere that guidance was available to employers. So many employers are actually reaching out to find out what's in the bill, but also what is really fair beyond just the minimum standard.
Ai-Jen Poo, the daughter of a neurobiologist and oncologist who decided she wanted to devote her life to helping domestic workers after she met some and now organizes nannies and maids through her National Domestic Workers Alliance, where she hears stories of abuse, low or no pay, humiliation. One woman said her employer asked her to walk the dog in a stroller while dressed head to toe in a white uniform. But Ai-Jen, after a profile of you in the New York Times, there were comments like this one from June Well. She says, wow, it sure doesn't feel like inequality where I sit. My child's caretaker has a job I envy, loves doing it, gets paid year-round on the books, including her vacation and ours. We treat her with affection and, more importantly, respect. And there are others who say, I may not pay my help a lot, but it's the best I can do. And especially if they are illegal, it's better than they would do otherwise.
I think that many employers who employ domestic workers haven't developed an awareness about what it means to be an employer and the responsibilities, and maybe haven't actually thought about the fact that there's a whole family that's dependent on this income that you're providing this worker. And a lot of employers in this industry are employees themselves. They go to work every day and work for somebody else, and maybe they're thinking about this as help, which is one of the reasons why we really work to have this work recognized as a real job, as real work, so that there's more awareness about the responsibilities associated with employing someone in your home. Yeah.
Barbara Ehrenreich calls this the most intimate class divide in human civilization. and says that the reason for the entire economy functioning so well, both halves of a couple working and able to earn huge six-figure salaries because of nannies and housekeepers who are paid just a small fraction of that, that there's this sense that, you know, the economy rides on them.
We often talk about how if every domestic worker in New York City decided one day to go on strike, there isn't a single industry or workforce that wouldn't in some way be touched by that. I mean, really, there's this invisible army of workers that goes into people's homes quietly in the morning before the sun rises, oftentimes, to allow for all the other workers in corporate law firms, professors, doctors, all kinds of professionals to go to work and do what they do. And so it just really speaks to how invisible but yet vital this workforce is in the economy.
We understand that you are working on a project to try to generate 3 million new home jobs to meet the needs of baby boomers. On the healthcare end of things. How do you do that?
There's just a huge number of people over the course of the next 20 years who are going to need a caregiver and in-home support just to meet their basic daily needs. And a lot of those workers are going to be people who are our members or are potentially our members. And so what we're working together with senior groups and disability rights groups and unions to create new jobs to be able to meet the care gap that's going to come as a result of the changing demographics in this country, but to make sure that the jobs that we create are quality, dignified jobs with career paths and career ladders and training, adequate training, so that workers are prepared for those jobs, a path to citizenship for immigrant workers in those jobs, but most importantly, to make sure that our loved ones, our seniors, and our communities have a dignified quality of life and get the care that they need.
What do you say, Ai-Jen, to the people who say, you know, this is political correctness run amok? There has always been a part of the population that, especially newly arrived, has taken these low-level jobs of caring for other people's children and house cleaning, whether it was the Irish earlier in the last century or women from Ghana now or on the West Coast, women, Hispanic women, and that this is an American way to sort of bootstrap your way up into the culture. You know, the next generation, their children won't be doing this kind of work. And yet, if we equalize their pay and their rights, then Americans won't be able to hire them, and they won't have that track to a better life.
Well, I would say that it's a new economy and a new day. And in the 21st century American economy, jobs and care are one of the fastest growing jobs. In some ways, if you take a look at the care industry, from daycare to domestic work to home care, into healthcare, those jobs and the quality of those jobs are as much a window onto the health of the entire economy in the United States as the manufacturing index was back in the 20s and 30s. This is the direction of our entire economy. And if we don't figure out how to make these jobs quality, dignified, living wage jobs, but also really in partnership with the people who need the care and the families who rely on that care, making sure that it's affordable and the quality of the care is as good as it possibly can be for our communities. I think that home attendants are the third fastest growing workforce in the country. So this is not something that is just about a small, invisible part of our workforce. In fact, more and more people are doing this work. More and more people need these workers. And I think more and more of us are going to feel a connection to this workforce over time.
That's Ai-Jen Poo. She's been organizing domestic workers across the country as director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, a collection of dozens of unions across the country. She also is responsible for passing New York State's Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. Ai-Jen, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.